Welcome to the McCovey Croncast, the greatest San Francisco Giants baseball podcast of all time. And now here are your hosts, McCoveyChronicles.com site contributors Brian Murphy, Doug Bruzzoni, and Sammy Higgins.
The Giants have won three baseball game series in a row, and they are 14-14 as we record this. It is Brian Murphy, Doug Bruzzoni, and Sammy Higgins. Guys, folks, people, are you excited, or are you your arms still folded going, nope, I'm going to wait another month and see what's going on with this team?
The Giants might actually be good.
Wait, can I be both? I can enjoy this and still be like, I'm going to wait and see.
The biggest news, I think, at this very moment as I'm sitting here, and you can both jump me on this if I'm wrong, is that Joe Panic's gone for 2 months.
Yes.
So that to temper the excitement of taking 3 of 4 against the Dodgers, and I love that everyone in around both teams approached this weekend going, oh god damn it. Like both teams just went in going like, this is gonna suck. This is gonna suck so much. And then it did, and the Giants still won 3 out of 4, and then but Joe Panic is down. I think that it's a thumb surgery, right? It's looking like
it's looking like surgery. Yeah. So it's a thumb sprain, they said, but I think it's a torn ligament, is what I also heard. I don't know if that's the same thing, but it sounds like he's going to need surgery. He's going for a second opinion, I think, tomorrow.
And of course, another reason for Giants fans to strongly dislike Yasiel Puig, it happened on the knee of Yasiel Puig.
It did. I mean, let's be fair to Yasiel Puig, though. He felt so bad about it that he went out and got himself injured the next day.
Twice.
I think I would actually say...
He was being as fair as he could.
I would say that is actually within his character.
Yeah.
I would totally see it. It would be like, Puig sad. Puig, your friend. He's not... I didn't mean it.
Puig, get us injured together. Puig, your... Hashtag Puig, your friend.
Surgery buddies. And the Dodgers are just sitting there horrified.
No.
Dave Roberts is like, we've talked to you about this so many times.
You can't be surgery buddies with everyone in the league. Just because he has Tommy John doesn't mean you have to. So I guess the biggest thing that we should focus on out of this four-game series, really, the only thing that matters that happened this week that matters is Pablo Sandoval pitched the cleanest inning of relief we're going to see this season. Unless a Giants pitcher throws an immaculate inning, which is 9 consecutive strikes for 3 straight strike to strike out the side. I don't see a Giants pitcher doing that, but you know, 11 pitches in under 2.5 minutes and from a third baseman coming in to pitch is as immaculate as it gets. It's Pablo Sandoval pitching this inning.
I loved the quote after the game when he was asked how he learned that curveball, and he said, you don't learn that. You're born with it.
Doug, what stood out to you about that?
What's that?
Pablo Sandoval pitching.
That it was the only fun thing in that game. It made the entire game worthwhile. That was not a worthwhile game, by the way. Okay. Apologies to Alan Hansen, who homered his first at bat of the year. But the only reason that did not justify the game. Pablo Sandoval getting into a 15-6 game and throwing an incredible inning is like, oh, good. I'm glad that game happened then, because you know what? We got this out of it.
I'm gonna throw a small caveat in there, in that Derek Law getting his first major league hit and scoring a run on Alan Hansen's home run almost made the game worthwhile. But I agree, not quite.
I think that is a good number. That's like a solid number two, and maybe not even a distant number two of things that happened in that game, because it's almost like if the Pablo thing hadn't have happened, we might all be saying that's one of the most improbable things you'll ever see. Is Derek Law having to pitch and then get a hit and then score the run, et cetera, on an Alan Hansen home run, which I want to get into Alan Hansen in a little bit, because my God, I didn't know he existed until Monday. I'm sort of paid to know this. But for me, what stood out was that I had forgotten I remembered quickly that he warms up before each game, basically pitching, like long tossing. But I had forgotten he was a switch pitcher. So to me, what was the exciting part was, had a left-handed batter, had there been, there was a left-handed batter, had there been a situation, he could have gone lefty-lefty.
He could have. He said, someone said after the game that he wasn't planning on doing that because he had surgery on his left arm or his left hand at some point, and he's still treating a little gingerly.
Okay, but come July.
So he didn't want to air it out. Come July, yeah. When he comes in July as the seventh inning guy,
that's right.
He's going to be a switch pitcher.
So, you know, because I know you've heard me, you both heard me say this many times before. I feel like switch pitching is the next innovation. It's the next thing to happen in baseball. I think he could have, it just would have been exciting. I don't, but everything that happened was as exciting it could be. Like, I did not need that to be any more exciting than it was, because it played out beautifully. He threw a 69-mile-an-hour pitch. We could not have asked for anything more. The 69-mile-an-hour curveball, by the way, was a tight, perfect curveball. It was beautiful. I just want to just focus on the idea that under the ash, the pile of garbage, whatever you want to say about that game, the Giants did something they did not do at all last year, which is find something good about, you know, pulled something good out of something bad, which I think we'd all agree in life, but in certainly all the baseball we've watched, if that's the last inning of your game and you've got a doubleheader going into it, I don't think Bruce Bochy necessarily planned this, but it worked out in a serendipitous way that the Giants has basically been sorely lacking for a year and a half. Which is that it just worked out. It got everyone pumped up, and it worked out as an actual strategy. And it had momentum is as great as your starting pitcher, is the saying, as the next day's starting pitcher, sure. But again, coming into the series, the Giants brass, everyone involved with both teams were like, this is going to suck. And then it did actually suck on the Saturday. And somehow there was just that moment of like, oh, this isn't going to be as bad as it feels like it is. So.
Oh, sure. Everyone's all excited about Pablo pitching in the ninth of a blowout. But then when Pablo hits a walk-off at the end of last season, everybody complains.
You're right, Sammy. We really did. Ignore that.
No, it wasn't even people ignored it. People were actively mad that he cost the team the first draft pick.
That's right, because now we're just sitting here speculating about who they're going to get picked second. Who cares about that? but yes, so Pablo Sandoval is the early... He's the April hero, almost, single-handedly. We might get into that later about who's the April hero, because we're not going to record another one before the end of the month. So the Giants also took 2-3 from Washington, and they took 2-3 from Los Angeles, which we talked about. I'm going to say that two of those three series wins are really great, and the Nationals one is the bigger sign, though, that the Giants are better than we thought coming into the season. They're basically maybe possibly as good as we hoped they would be heading into the season. I'll say that because the Nationals are struggling, and the Giants didn't play down to their level so much. Except for the getaway game, of course. But when they lost 15-2, but the Nationals are not at full strength, and the Giants didn't play them like they weren't at full strength. They played to the top of their ability, and they took that series as well. You know, Los Angeles is really good, and they played them tough, and they played the Dodgers really tough. But I also think you play a team that's struggling, and then you struggle along with them. You give them the oh, we're struggling, but we still came through thing. That's something the 2017 Giants did all the time. They were the team that made other teams better.
The 2017 Giants, it would be a bad team would roll into town, and the Giants would be like, oh, we're right there with you. There was absolutely no like thought that, oh yeah, we're gonna take advantage of that. It was no, we're gonna commiserate.
That's right.
We're going to relate to you.
That's really impressive how you're doing that bad. Let's see how much worse we can do this.
Yeah, exactly. I wonder if we could do that.
So five.
You know, see, they were the fix for bad teams.
What's that?
I said, no, they were in the business of fixing bad teams.
That's
last
right.
Year.
That's right. Yep, there's your problem. You haven't played us yet. So in the two losses this week, this past week, they surrendered 30 runs. So there's that.
Not ideal. Yeah.
I don't really want to dwell on what happened with Stratton on Saturday. Stratton has been a really nice story. The draft class of 2012 has really come roaring into 2018 with the vengeance. Maybe next time Roger's on, we'll talk about that and be like, what's happened? Why are they all so mad and doing so well suddenly? I think, you know, people, the angry sports fan who wants to, who's just the drunk idiot that wants to rag on Chris Stratton for building a family, at this point, we don't need to entertain that. But it's also just he's never going to forget one of the worst games he's ever had because of the birth of his second child. So there is like this funny connection between it. That I think is just amusing. It happened, and it's a baseball game. It doesn't matter. The birth of your child is way more important. But it's also funny that that kid will, when the kid's doing, you know, poorly or is just doing something to tick off his dad, he's like, you know what? That one start cost me.
Well, to be fair, you know, he only gave up 6 runs. So, you know, if the bullpen had held it together... I'm stretching.
So what you're saying is that 20 years from now, Derek Law
is going to get a call.
Or like Roberto Gomez is like never going to give that kid a birthday present. Be like, you cost me a contract.
I felt so bad for him after that game. And obviously they had a rough game too. And Stratton gave up 6, Gomez gave up 3, and Law gave up 6, is that math check out? Yeah. But it's like they knew there was no help coming. It's like one of those, you know, battles in the movies where it's like, you know that they're all going to die, but they're going to fight until they do.
Oh, and the worst part was it was one of those movies, but they didn't even get to just like stand and watch the explosion, the shockwave approach them. They were actively being stabbed and shit on while it was happening, and they still weren't dying. Like, that's what made the game so miserable. The Giants were willing to give it away. It just took a very long time to give it away. Very painful giveaway. But it's over now, everyone. The Giants still won the series. And 14-14, I think in the comments of the recap, you know, it's mentioned, like, I don't think we need to rush to say this is a good team because they're 500 at the end of April. But as I will mention here, if you're listening to this and going, they're 500, who cares? Like, that doesn't make them a good team. I'm contextualizing in two ways. They did not have a winning month all of last season. And I'm not even sure they had a 500 month last season. I could be wrong on that.
They did not.
Okay, they didn't even have a 500 month last season. And in fact, they have to win tonight. We're releasing the podcast on Monday, April 30th. They have to actually win tonight to secure a winning month for the first time since June of 2016, which is ridiculous. So at least on those levels, they're much better off than they have been. But in the other context, the second context, and that is plenty of teams that have done well have had slow Aprils. And you would rather the Giants have a slow April where they're at or slightly below 500 than when they're 6 games under. You know what I mean? Like, it's better to be in this position than being the other ones. They're much closer to their goal this way. Yeah, they're not 16 and... Oh, do some math, Brian. They're not 16 and 12. but they are certainly in a better position. And you have to also factor in, Jeff Samardzija is not at full strength. They didn't have him for most of the month. Johnny Cueto was actually on the disabled list at some point this month. They didn't have Mack Williamson, who's now back on the concussion DL, which we'll get into in a second. And, you know, Hunter Pence struggled for most of the month. Andrew McCutchen saved 2 hits has really been nothing special. You know, Evan Longoria was absent for half the month, essentially, with his bat. Austin Jackson's had 1 hit, right? It was that hit on Saturday night that broke the game open for the Giants. Like, that was the only hit he's had the entire month. You know, Brandon Belt was benched 5 times this month for striking out and is ending the month on a hot streak and is one of their best hitters. And, you know, it's Chris Stratton had 1 bad start the whole month. Johnny Cueto, all of his starts have basically been excellent. The bullpen has been stellar. But basically, you know, and they haven't had Madison Bumgarner, I'm failing to mention. So there's been a lot of ups and downs, and yet through all that, they're 500. That's great. That's good. That's actually a sign of a good team.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, the 2000 Giants were three games under 500 in April. So this team's going to finish at least two games better than that team. That's just
tells you all you need to know, right? They're better than that team.
That team won 97 games, so these Giants are guaranteed to win at least 99 games. You can't argue with math.
Well, and I think it's important to like remember like what the expectations were once the injuries started coming in. Is like the best we could really hope for was for them to tread water and come out at 500, and that's exactly what they did. So I think that's promising.
I think going forward, obviously, Joe Panic going down, Mac Williamson now in a concussion situation from a very scary, if you didn't see it, it was scary. He battled the bullpen mound and tripped and then rolled and slammed the back of his head, the back of his neck against the wall on the third baseline. And yeah, maybe we can dedicate some time at some point in a future podcast to, I don't know, not having the bullpen mounds on the fields anymore, or maybe some more, we hear more about the coaches saying, yeah, we're just telling our guys not to chase the ball in that area. And I would also throw out there, maybe the Giants, do you think the Giants have been extremely lucky or is it the result of luck, or is it the result of intelligence that in the entire history of the park, there's really been like, there's been three bad injuries related to those bullpen mounts. And there's Dustin Moore and Mac Williamson, and I feel like there was one for a visiting team, and I can't remember who it was.
Yeah, that seems about right. I think it's not that big of a deal, usually. You know, you can go years without seeing anyone really get hurt there, but when you do, suddenly you're like, oh, should we do something about it? But my instinct is that there are very few balls that are hit in the exact wrong way that someone has to sprint over there at full speed, doesn't really have time to take account to, you know, take the bullpen mound into account while they go full out for the ball. That's also like a ball they can catch. But when it does happen, you start thinking, well, yeah, maybe this is not worth it.
I pointed this out too. Oh, go ahead, Sammy.
Well, there's been plenty of times where it hasn't resulted in a major injury, but there's been plenty of times where people have taken bad falls. I mean, it's a hazard.
I promise I'm not blaming this on the person who was injured. I do want to point out 1 and 1A about Mac Williamson. I think that play doesn't happen if he's not playing as well as he's been playing. Because I think when you're playing with confidence, you have the shield. You know, you're not thinking about the problems that could happen, and you're thinking you can do things, and he's all, you know, you're thinking you can do a lot of stuff. And I think he's comfortable enough in that situation, that part of the outfield and on balls like that, that it was just one of those things where maybe he was at 95 or 100% going towards that. And if this was another time where maybe he's scuffled out the box, he's at 75% or maybe 85% of hustle, and it's that extra 10% that, I don't know. However, we saw the inches with the Dodgers. Your foot falls the wrong way, you're falling off the mound. You know, you're positioned slightly differently on defense, the ball gets right past you. So who knows? I'm just saying, man, and this gets in my 1A. Mac Williamson, for one, if he's confident, maybe he doesn't get hurt. Not confident, maybe he doesn't get hurt. But because he was confident, he sprinted into the injury, which leads into my 1A. Why is it whenever he's doing well, he gets hurt?
First off, I just want to say I actually don't agree with the premise of that. I think if he was playing badly, if he was, you know, not hitting, he would be going even more all out on defense to prove that he should still be playing. I feel like that's the door is open for that. So he might be more likely to hurt himself. He might be more likely to you know, do that, or Jarrett Parker himself into a wall.
So I'm projecting then, because what I'm projecting is, well, I'm doing poorly, I sure as hell I'm not going to then go and injure myself.
Right.
That's what I would be thinking. I would be like, I'm not going to get hurt on top of being shitty. So
no, I think like, I'm doing poorly, I better show them that I'm working my ass off so I don't get sent to Sacramento.
Right, because imagine if he wasn't hitting well, and everyone would be like, well, why isn't he going harder on defense?
Yeah, like, if he wasn't going well, people would be like, whoa, Gorkys Hernandez is coming in late innings for defense. He should be there in early innings, too. Am I right? And they'd high-five someone who doesn't really agree, but you can't just leave someone hanging for a high-five.
Sure okay. you can.
All right, so then it just gets to my 1A. Why does this keep happening whenever he gets hurt? Or when he's playing well. He had that stretch, you know, in 2016, I believe, where he played for that extended period of time. I feel like it was the stretch, and then he got hurt for that one, right? I think that's what it was. I definitely remember in one of his call-ups when he did well for a stretch.
That was 2016. It was it was when he had that amazing double off Andrew Miller that everyone still talks about. The end of that stretch, he got hurt.
Right, and that was for diving for a ball in the outfield that was in fair territory, right?
I do not remember.
I feel like that's what it was. Anyway, but yeah, it's a shame that keeps happening. Whatever Mack Williamson, we've seen the adjustments he's made to his swing. Jeff Sullivan's article on FanGraphs really does show the Justin Turner overdriveness of that swing change. He's not Justin Turner, though, because he doesn't look horrendous and he doesn't stand on the plate. So I'm for it. It doesn't bother me then. And if it erases the memory of Justin Turner from my mind, that's fine.
And also, I mean, I'm not sure. I feel like I've said this before. I don't think it was on the podcast. He's also physically the opposite of Justin Turner because nobody ever wants to look at Justin Turner. But you can't take your eyes off Mack Williamson.
Mack Williamson is what Justin Turner becomes when a princess kisses Justin Turner. And so now he's on the DL. So there we go. And obviously we wish him well. Concussions are scary. They're scary. That's the main thing. I was going to say they're tricky in the baseball sense, but really they're scary. And that his health is the most important thing. And certainly we want him to come back quickly.
Was the weird rule where I guess they can't retroactively DL him for the concussion because they sent down Slater on Friday night and then had to bring him back up the next day and he hadn't been down long enough. So now they can't retroactively DL Williamson, which is so weird.
Right. I remember seeing that a little bit. So, I mean, that's because, you know, teams will take advantage of that somehow if they can.
Yeah.
Especially because I would imagine the concussion DL sort of gets they're strict with it, but not in the sense of to the extent that you could work through it. You know what I mean? You could convince them that someone needs to go on the DL for a concussion. And so because of that, probably there are other rules that make it stricter to abuse the additional rules.
That's what I would think. I would think actually by design, it's pretty easy to put someone on the concussion DL. Because you really want to make completely sure with concussions you don't play them. And so that would be my guess as to why.
It's to incentivize teams to put them on the DL immediately.
Yeah, because you don't the Giants let Williamson hang on the roster for 2 days after he maybe had a concussion. Well, they're like, no, just put him on right now and he'll be back in a week. And
well, the Giants didn't do that. What was weird to me was that if they had not sent down Slater Friday night and only to call him up the next day, then they could have brought William. They could have retroactively DL'd him. It's the fact that Slater never actually played any games when he got sent down. That's why they have to do it the day that they announced it. And now he can't come back till Saturday.
Well, that's what I was saying. Or I Doug phrased it perfectly. Like it's easy to put them on there, but you can't play. It's hard to play around with it.
No, I understand that. I guess the weirdness is if it had been any other player that they had used in a corresponding move, then it's just the fact that they called Slater back up the next day.
So Slater was tearing it up in AAA, and maybe, Doug, you could give us some insight, because I know you tend to see them a little bit. It hasn't quite translated. He didn't quite come up and kill it over a three-game stretch or two-game stretch, but what is he doing anything in particular that stands out, or just like, nope, he's seeing pitches and hitting them?
Yeah, I mean, he's just doing things good hitters do. He's driving balls into the gap. He wasn't hitting. I don't think he had any home runs until very recently. But there was a lot of, you know, right center field, left center field, squaring balls up, hitting them on kind of lines that I'm sure is what the Giants really want to see from him. He's not the power guy. You know, he's not. not that he doesn't have power, but he doesn't have the massive natural power that, that Mac has or Jarrett Parker has. I don't know why I'm talking about Jarrett Parker so much. I'm sorry.
The ghost of Jarrett Parker. Yes.
The ghost of Jarrett Parker, just hanging out somewhere. But I think that he was hitting the ball the way that the team wanted him to do it, which is as kind of a gap-to-gap line drive guy. And if I had to guess that, then I would guess that's what they saw.
Well, hopefully he can get it going again because he'll probably get a little bit more playing time over the next week. But it would also help if the Giants, the ones they're paying millions of dollars to, if they got it going as well, McCutcheon and Jackson. And we're already seeing Longoria going. One person they're not paying millions of dollars to, which we should talk about before we fully move on into what's going on ahead, and that is Ty Block being a Dodger, not Slayer, Dodger Restrainer, Dodger Controller, Dodger Dominatrix, Dodger Dodger Subduer, Dodger Comptroller. I don't know. So there, Ty Block has pitched extremely well against the Dodgers and basically not that great against everyone else in his career. And you know what? I'm okay with that.
Right. If you have to pick one team.
That's right. I mentioned this in the recap yesterday, and so this is just what I'm seeing. I see he just pitches with confidence. Like he's sharp enough, but not sharper. His pitches are not necessarily better than when he's pitching against other teams. I don't know if the sequencing is, if he's got a script going against the Dodgers because he gets what their hitters are able to do. If he's just more focused because it's the Dodgers and he can hit his spots. I mean, he doesn't have great stuff. It's all cunning and guile for him. Yeah, and in any case, and against the Dodgers, he seems to have that extra little bit of cunning and guile. Pluck, if you will.
Kirk and Kipe call it onage.
Onage, sure. But what is he?
It's onage.
Yeah, onage is onage, I believe. Yeah.
Oh!
Yes.
Of
course.
But, I mean, he's attacking hitters inside. He struck out Yasmani Grandal with a fastball at 91 miles an hour, and that's a pitch that any other hitter would mostly crush. Grandal batting right-handed, maybe not as good as when he's hitting left-handed, but, you know, it was just above the hands, just barely, and he got it in just enough to really get into that hole in the swing. But the confidence to even attack a hitter like that later in the game, I believe it was in the sixth inning, just even doing that is sort of impressive, and it's surprising, and it's, you know, he's not throwing a better curveball against the Dodgers than he's throwing it against other teams, but he's maybe just throwing it in different counts than he usually would. Maybe he's just able to get ahead of them better. In any case, Ty Block being the he's basically the missile that the Giants can truck out. I'm trying to think of a mystical weapon. I got nothing. But he's basically this mystical weapon they can trot out whenever the Dodgers are rolling it down. And I tend to think that is charming. Because this is baseball. This shouldn't work this way, and it's working exactly this way.
Yeah, he's what? Aragorn's ghost army?
There we go. I mean, he's yeah. I mean, I don't want to get into the Marvel thing. I can't think of what he is. He would be an Infinity Stone. I don't know. Yeah, but it's a little surprising that the Dodgers opted not to shuffle it around and make sure Kershaw pitched in the series. Not because he would be going up against Ty Block, but it would be funny if it was because Ty Block was pitching in the series. But because the Giants have almost always face the Dodgers, and the Dodgers make it that way because they know the Giants just can't hit Kershaw. So Kershaw being the best pitcher on the planet, still in my estimation, him being trotted out for every one of these series doesn't have the same charm or pluckiness or kind of just jokiness of the Block thing, but it is essentially the same thing, which means that the Giants have their own Clayton Kershaw. So they don't need to sign him.
I mean, before that, when Madison Bumgarner's playing, the Kershaw starts are a little bit more fun because you have the Madison Bumgarner. Is he going to homer off of Kershaw today? The answer is usually yes.
Right. You do have that extra thing. All right, I just had to get the tie block in there because Sammy did a fantastic job of putting together a rundown, and she included that, and I have not segued into that at all. Let's look ahead real quick. Let's do our picks to click. Let's review that right now. Let's just do that right now because I want to get into this week real quick. I don't remember who had it. I think Sammy won again, though.
You didn't get to pick.
So.
No. Who did you pick?
That's just as well because, boy, I have not nailed it when I picked.
Well, it's 2-1-0, right? No, wait, Sammy won again, so it's 3-1-0. So who was this week?
I'm sorry, four. If four? I won this week. Yeah, because I got two for Evan Longoria.
That's why I gave you the two, and then you won again. I didn't give you two again.
I won Brandon Belt, and then did
that,
I
which
win
was one.
Belt?
I only gave you one for that. You said, I should get two. And I said, you get one.
You said if I won this week, I got three. I'm like, so that's if what I mean. Won this week, I'm at four.
Okay, so that's what I mean. You got four. You have four.
Okay. So well, did I win? Who did you pick?
I don't even remember. It wasn't anyone memorable, though.
I picked Brandon Crawford, and he did get his first home run, and he has been hitting a little better.
No, you should not win just because.
No, you don't get to
you
win
said
for
I
Brandon
won.
Hold on. I don't remember who I picked, but you know what? Since I don't remember who I picked, I'm not going to dispute it. So, but again, I'm a week late. I picked Pablo Sandoval the week before.
Right, but that doesn't
or a week count. Early. It doesn't count. I'm just saying I picked the only one I got right was the first one. I got Joe Panic and I picked Brandon Belt, and that was then became the week Brandon Belt got killed, and then you picked him, and then that was the week he got hot. I picked Pablo Sandoval that week and he did nothing, and then this was the week where he had the best inning in the history of baseball and I get nothing for it. Nothing. Did I pick Posey maybe? I said we can't pick Posey. And I wouldn't have picked Longoria, so I don't know. But, all right, I guess Sammy wins. I mean, I guess unless we want to sit here and pause and go and listen, but nah, who cares? Sammy won. Sammy has a commanding 4-1-0 lead right now. Let's look ahead. The Dodgers are gone, so it's the Padres. And it's the Padres, and who else is this week? And now we're in the stretch where the Giants don't have – they have plenty of off days. Who was I reading about, rambling about their off days? They have an off day on Thursday. They're playing the Padres and the Braves this week, which is what a miserable week. I guess the Braves have Acuna and they have Freddie Freeman and they have some players of note, but it's in Atlanta, which is also worse.
Well, okay. It's better to go to Atlanta now than in the summer.
Yes.
Good point. It's a good point, Doug. All right. So, all right. Who, Sammy, you won. You're up first.
Come back to me. I gotta figure out who needs. I gotta figure out who needs the luck.
Who needs the spark? I'm gonna pick McCutcheon. Maybe I picked him last week.
I think you did.
I'm picking him again.
Okay.
I almost picked Gorkys Hernandez because I really wanted to write an article about Gorkys Hernandez, but then he didn't have any hits this weekend, and that knocked it out. But he had been playing pretty well in his spot time up until this weekend. And I to the point where I was going to be like, maybe the reason why he's sticking around is because the Giants see that he has some use for them. He still does have use for them, obviously, but you know, people keep wondering why is Gorky's on the roster. And I feel like he keeps proving just enough why he's the fifth outfielder. It's perfectly fine that he's the fifth outfielder. So I'm not picking him, though. I'm picking McCutcheon again.
Okay, I'm picking Alan Hansen. He got called up from Sacramento. He was great in Sacramento, and I'm going to curse him by picking him instead of whoever Sammy picks.
Well, that makes it really interesting because I was going to pick Kelby Tomlinson.
Oh, we have a fight.
Oh, man. So with Hansen, do you have any idea of if is he like a genuinely good switch hitter? I mean, he had a 409 on base percentage in Sacramento.
I have no idea.
I mean, I wonder if he is going to be, because the Giants very recently had had a switch hitting middle infielder who didn't do all that great. I'm thinking of Tony Abreu, but that's not actually the guy I want to say, but that is the one I'm thinking of right now. So I guess, is Alan Hansen better than Tony Abreu is the question we will find in the coming weeks and months.
I think because Doug picked Alan Hansen, I'm going to take Kelby off the table and I'm going to go with Austin Jackson. I feel like he's starting to turn it around.
with this one.
I'm glad you're going to get him going, Sammy. That's going to be important to the team.
Yeah.
One hit in 100 plate appearances. I think that's good.
He's had more than one hit. He had two hits in Saturday night's game.
It's the most impressive part of Austin Jackson's season so far has been that he's had the worst plate appearances. He's had worse plate appearances than Brandon Crawford. Brandon Crawford has had no good plate appearances this year and is striking out at an alarmingly high rate. But Austin Jackson is actually outclassing him in both categories. But now Sammy's gotten him going. All right. Okay.
I don't think I really got Crawford going, though. I think I just won by default, so maybe I should stick with Crawford.
Are either of you noticing anything about Crawford? I just feel like he's giving away at bats.
So I noticed in Saturday night's game that he came up with two runners on in two different plate appearances with two outs, and he swung on the first pitch and just hit into like really easy outs. And so I don't know if that's like a longer going theme, but that's something that stood out to me. It's like kind of like maybe take a pitch, wait for your pitch.
Well, he did come up through the Giants organization. I don't know if that, I don't know if he's ever going to think that, but yeah, it doesn't look like he changes his swing for any situation or his approach for any situation, or it just looks like he's giving away at bats. I'm not even going to try to psychologically understand it, just what it looks like. He doesn't look like he's going, like he's doing it. It doesn't look like he's doing anything when he's up there. Like even when Austin Jackson's struggling, which is all he's done, it looks like he's, I'm not saying Brandon Crawford isn't trying. I'm just saying Brandon Crawford is approaching in the plate like how he talks. It's one monotone, unchanging, unbreaking approach to the at-bat. Austin Jackson looks like he's like, I got to try to hit this inside pitch. I got to try to hit that outside pitch. I got to try to hit this pitch that's above my eyes. I got to try to hit this ball in the dirt that bounced 5 feet in front of home plate. Like you see what he's, you know what I mean? Like he's anxious in there, or he's trying to figure it out. And Brandon Crawford's just, it's the same long swing over pitches, over the pitch, away from the pitch. Like it doesn't matter. So I don't know, but he's so valuable on defense. It really doesn't actually matter, I don't think. Like, if the rest of the lineup gets going and Brandon Crawford's going to strike out 300 times this year, which feels like he's on pace for, he's striking out 30% of the time, so he's not going to do that. But he's going to strike out a lot. He's on pace to strike out quite a bit. I think the Giants will take that because, I mean, provided his 31-year-old body does not slow his defense down one millimeter, he'll be fine.
Yeah, I mean, obviously he's going to stick around in the lineup and everything, basically, unless he completely falls apart defensively.
Well, what are you going to do, put Kelby Tomlinson there?
I mean, they would if you'd picked him for this week. They'd have had no choice.
Hey, Tomlinson had some nice plays when Pablo pitched.
It's true. He's backing up the best.
He had some nice plays in the night game, too. He turned that double play with Crawford and Belt really nicely, so you could almost pretend panic was still there.
All right, we're all set then. We got our people. That's good. One thing I'm excited about this week is Andy Suarez coming back up to start. It could go spectacularly wrong, but he had such a great start that we didn't even talk about it. But, you know, I'm talking about we, meaning the Giants, the collective community, the beat reporters, whatever. It feels like it got glossed over and didn't get brought up really again. And maybe it didn't need to, but it also feels like, you know, we're all guilty of this. The Baggerlys of the world, we're all guilty of this. Like only dredging up the bad stuff that keeps happening instead of, why not asking like, why isn't Andy Suarez up here every other day?
Well, I think the issue at the time was because he and Beattie both made their starts back to back, and then he was immediately sent down. Because, you know, Beattie pitched first, so they would need him again first. So it was kind of like he was here and gone so fast.
Doug, do you think the Giants, if not regret, maybe go or rethought that decision real quickly based on how well Suarez pitched?
My guess would be that they had kind of made a pretty much, they had kind of had to guess before which of them would be better. Because of the way that the timing of the rotation worked out, and they guessed it'd be Beattie, And then Beattie wasn't really good in either of his starts, but they couldn't throw Suarez on 3 days rest for a second start. So it was kind of at that point as well, what are you going to do? But they, I'm sure they must have watched Suarez's start. And, you know, Suarez showed a lot more in his start than Beattie did in either of his. And so I'm sure they were like, well, we guessed wrong. But, you know, it's a guess. What, you can't be too mad at them for not getting that right. There were red flags at both players. And they got it wrong. But well, what are you going to do?
And it might be a little less guessing than when they pitched last in the minors before they got called up. And it could have just been a matter of timing.
I think they had set up the rotation for Beattie to take that start. They had set up Beattie's minor league start in San Jose pretty specifically, so he would be able to do that. So, I mean, it was honestly, I guess it was even a guess before the season started. and at that point, I mean, no, that's what they had to do because they were so short on pitchers in a way that it would have been unfair to expect them to see coming. And so at that point, you know, you do your best.
I think, you know, the way the Padres have played the Giants the last season and already this season, they've just beaten the Giants' brains in. You know, I can see that start for Suarez going very poorly very quickly. But I'm very excited because I think you come up and you don't walk anybody and you strike out seven. I think that's really impressive, especially, you know, I'm not used to a Giants pitcher doing that. When they get called up, usually there's some walks in there and there's some wonky control, and he just never looked like he was overwhelmed by the situation. And I would expect against the Padres, which is, you know, very young, talented team, that it's still, they're still in the ballpark of the competition he's been facing, that he should be able to hold his own against them. I would hope, but it's baseball. And Ty blocks Clayton Kershaw against the Dodgers. So who knew? All right, so let's get your... go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, one thing we didn't get to was that Madison Bumgarner is getting very close to throwing again.
Well, is it true, or are they hoping to get confirmation that he can go ahead and throw?
That's a good point. The last I saw was that they were hoping that he would be cleared to throw by, what, the 1st?
That sounds about right. I still think it's going to be June, what is it, June 1st or right after Memorial Day that they'll have him come back?
Well, yeah, but throwing was the first step of getting him back, because then I think they wanted him to be throwing for a couple of weeks and then start rehab, so.
Obviously this week is, now you mention it this way, we should probably phrase it as this is a very important week for the for Madison Bumgarner. And therefore for the Giants. Yes, on the field, it's very important how they perform against two teams that they should be able to hold their own against. And also, if they're going to make any noise in July, August, September, they're going to need Bumgarner back. And we'll know this week if that's a possibility. I mean, that would be quite a bit of bad luck if they lose Panic, Williamson, and definitively are not going to have, you know, if there's some setback with Bumgarner. All in the same, like within the 96 hour window, that'd be rough.
Like you're asking for bad luck right now.
it's what I do. Yeah. We didn't even talk about Jeff Samardzija's start. I wanted the first start. I was like, that was a great start given all the situation. The second start was kind of what I expected. Was actually what probably should have happened in the first start. So do we take anything away from the Samardzija start, or we just go, man, I hope he gets better?
The second one.
Yeah. He had a short rehab since, so just, you know, I hope he gets up to full speed. I did want to ask Doug about, did you see Hunter Pence this weekend?
I did. I saw him on Saturday night. He got one hit. It was not an impressive hit. It was kind of just a ground ball that, you know, sometimes not especially well hit ground balls find holes. It was just one of those. Otherwise, he struck out and he reached on an error. And he looked pretty good in right field. He, you know, he was pretty much max effort out there. But he doesn't look especially great offensively right now.
Well, that seems par for the course. All right, let's get to your Twitter questions. We ask your Twitter questions every week at Mick Croncast. And the question, first question I see is from Chowder at Yeah, Like the Soup. And the question is, if Brandon Belt was a prospect, would Bochy play him over Hunter Pence? So I guess that's if Brandon Belt were a left field prospect, let's say. If he were Mack Williamson, maybe? would Bochy play him over Hunter Pence? You know what, Chowder? I feel like we already know the answer to this question because it's almost exactly what's already happening. I still think Brandon Belt's being treated like a prospect by Bruce Bochy. I think him being benched five times in the first month of the season because he strikes out on borderline pitches indicates that Brandon Belt, we're getting him back into the Belt Wars. Brandon Belt gets treated differently than the other hitters on the team.
To point out Brandon Belt has the third most plate appearances on the team. So I think we can calm down with that.
I'm just saying it did happen, though, in the first month of the season. I'm not saying that that's, you know, he's playing well, but I'm just saying he does get treated differently than other players.
I don't think he does. I think that, you know, Bochy has sort of, he's not looking right or something, or I want to get these other guys to, you know, maintain what they were doing in spring training. I don't think it has to do with Belt. I think we as a fan base are probably, as the Belt, pro Belt fan base, are probably way too like, so what's Brandon Belt doing right now? How does this affect Brandon Belt? I don't think that they're thinking about Brandon Belt all that specifically. That's kind of my take on it.
Okay. Well, that's wrong, but we'll move on. Andrew Bader at Andrew_B_Bader asks, who are the Giants' best and worst tippers? This is using some imagination here. We could guess. We don't have any inside knowledge. I don't have any inside knowledge on this. But I think you could – I'm going to throw out who I think is one of the best tippers. And I would say Hunter Pence.
Oh, mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
I'm going to say Barry Bonds was probably one of the worst tippers in the history of the organization.
He was. Not trying to make up for it now, I bet. Yes. I bet now he'll go to like a nice restaurant and people will see him there and he'll like tip 40% or something. But back when he was playing, yeah. No way.
Barry Bonds now, though, goes overboard and like the maitre d' comes over and says, oh, your meal's been paid. And like, oh, who? Well, this is nice. And he's like, yes, that gentleman over there paid for it. And they look over and it's Barry Bonds and he waves. He goes, thank you. And he goes, you're welcome. I bought the restaurant just now. Like, he just Bruce Wayne's every situation and everyone's like, oh, you didn't have to go overboard there. All right.
I feel like, and this is based purely on his movie reviews, I feel like Brandon Belt's probably a critical tipper.
Like, he's, like, a critical as in a bad tipper, or, like...
Critical as in, like, he's the guy that maybe doesn't take the money and put it on the table, but he's keeping track.
I can also see Belt being the one where it's like, you're only tipping him a dollar, and he's like, they just brought me a bottle that was already in the fridge. They didn't serve me anything that was made.
I bet Derek Holland is a great tipper.
Yes.
He seems like someone who would, you know, he doesn't want to be noticed for it, but he wants to make sure he takes care of these guys. You know, he's a good guy. He wants to give a shot.
I'm going to go with he's been the tallest guy in every room he's ever been in, and he knows he can't hide. So he's had to learn how to be a good tipper. Because they know they'll say, oh, that tall asshole didn't tip me. And
Six last year.
That's right. Let me throw this little wrinkle out there. Which minor league a call-up, bench player, AAA guy, tips beyond his means? Like, shouldn't be tipping as much as he does. He tips, you know, the full 20-25% every time, maybe buys people's food every now and again. Just not smart with his money because of generosity.
Mac.
You think Mac's blowing it out?
I don't know. He just seems like a nice guy.
I'm all about Gorky's.
Gorky's, okay.
And I think Gregor Blanco, maybe when he was making the minimum or was a minor leaguer.
I'm gonna say Chris Shaw. If you've ever met Chris Shaw, he's like a talk show host. Like, he's so charming and delightful. And so I think that he just wouldn't be able to help himself.
That's a good one. Derek Law, I would nominate as someone who spends way too much on first dates. Like, he goes way too far to try to impress on the first date, with in terms of what they do and where they go, instead of just being himself.
Isn't he married?
Is he? Well, yeah, then I'll have to pick someone. Then I bet that's what he did for his first. That's how he got the gal. All right. Andrew Bader has another question, which I think is also a good one. Which Giants player has read a book most recently?
100 pounds.
Now, 100 pounds.
He reads a lot.
But my question is it like a Warhammer strategy guide?
I watch his wife's YouTube channel, so he reads a lot of, like, you know, not self-help, but, you know, self-improvement things and that kind of stuff.
Am I the only person who, when someone says, have you read any books lately, is thinking fiction? Or am I alone on this? Or,
well, okay, so I feel like he would have read nonfiction, but not that. I bet he's read like Guns, Germs, and Steel within the last year. I'm just gonna call it right now.
I think these are the answers we need to have. These are the questions we need to know. Because the questions are always, what's your favorite book? But like, what's the one you last read? Yes, I want to know.
I bet Sam Dyson's read a book recently. I bet he likes to hang out, read a book, and curl up with Snuckles.
my thought on Sam Dyson is he would be the one I'd be most surprised by to be the most Zen, like Buddhist like. Like, I think he's the one that does the transcendental meditation out of all the, I guess Hunter Pence is the actual one who does transcendental meditation, right?
Yes.
So besides him, who else on the team might do that? For some reason I'm going with Dyson. I'll say this.
Corey Guerin.
No. That's a good joke, Sam. Corey Guerin looks like a paranoid Barry Zito. Like, he, even with the beard, like Barry Zito became a hoarder and just like became a shut-in, and it's Corey Guerin now.
He moved to a cab in Kentucky and stopped shaving because razors are made by corporations.
I think Corey Guerin's paranoid because he doesn't know where the ball's going. So he can't control.
He's like, they're always leaving guys on base for me.
he doesn't know who's responsible for it, but he's afraid of it.
The man.
Yeah. All right. Let's see here. I can't even read this. This is such a long handle. I don't even know. But this is a long time first time, so we've got to do it. At Multiphasic. Is this Multiphasic from the comments section?
Yes.
Hi, Multiphasic.
Hi, Multiphasic. Hi, guys. Longtime listener, first time caller. Which Giants position player from the SF area do you most wish you could have seen pitch?
Sheerholt.
Which position player do you wish you could have seen dramatically out of position, i.e. infielder in the outfielder in the infield, Pedro Feliz as the catcher? And then there's actually a follow-up question. The last is, which current Giants position player would you most want to order a delicious concession from, and what concession would they be making? This is the most important. This is the most important. I'll be grading your replies. I'll take my answers off the air. It's a good two-tweet sequence there, Multiphasic. Let's start with the first one. Doug answered the first one. He wants to see Nate Sheerholtz. I can't think of anyone else in the SF era I'd want to see pitch. No one else is coming to mind.
Brandon Belt.
Brandon Belt? Yeah. Okay. Did Sean Dunston pitch?
Not with the Giants.
Because wasn't the whole thing with Sean Dunston that he throws like 98 miles an hour from shortstop to first or ridiculous velocity?
Spectacular arm. Yeah.
So I would have liked to have seen him Felix Rodriguez it up there, where he just throws 15 fastballs in an inning and somehow gets through it. Like 98 mile an hour fastballs, he gets through it. Which position player dramatically out of position? The Pedro Feliz at catcher thing is really hard to top.
Yeah.
I feel like I would have liked to have seen Tim Lincecum play any other position. I think that would have been funny because he was so small.
Well, which position player do you wish you could have seen out of position, though?
Oh, was it specifically position player out of position?
Yeah, it was. Yeah.
Okay, sorry.
I have not a tie. I just have two. Bonds at first, Posey at third.
Oof.
Honestly, my answer is probably Sherholtz at third again, because for a very long time, it was kind of a recurring thing on McCabe Chronicles. People were like, what if we move Sherholtz to third? And I was like, stop doing that. So you know what? Now I wish they had, because I would have liked to see it. I would have liked to know, I would have liked to have that peace of mind of knowing if I was incredibly right or if it was just a blip and I was still right, but like he didn't show up, but I was definitely still right. Everyone calm down. I was right. those are the Nate, two options.
One thing about Nate Sherholtz pitching that I forgot to mention when you said it was very likely he would have pitched without a glove. Because that shirt didn't wear batting gloves.
Favorite thing.
Let's see. Sammy, do you have a... Oh, wait, go ahead, Doug.
Sammy, do you have a position player you want to see out of position?
No, I was already on the concessions one.
Okay. Would you most want to order...
concession. Yeah. You want Brandon Belt to sell you. We all know...
I would... You know what? The only one I would trust is Hunter Pence with a coffee.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he would, he do well. That.
He would, huh? You don't want Pablo Sandoval making a Ghirardelli Sunday?
Sure.
The thing about Pablo making a Ghirardelli Sunday is that it would not look good, but it would be amazing. But then part of it would taste like his hand. There's no way that's not the case. It would absolutely happen.
I didn't order a Ghirardelli Sunday from Pablo, though. I ordered a coffee from Hunter Pence.
Well, too bad. Pablo Sandoval is right there, and he's sliding one over to you. And you're eating it to be polite, and it tastes like his hand.
Well, I'm going to say I'd order a funnel cake from Nick Hundley, because I think backup catchers love funnel cakes.
Let's see. Oh, I should have had an answer for this. Now I feel... Really, just, you know what? I want Buster Posey to just hurl some peanuts at me, and I want to be holding.
You don't actually get to eat the peanuts; yeah, they just hurt you, and then you say thank you and leave.
That's right.
You pay $12 for Buster Posey to throw peanuts at you.
By the way, they never leave the bag when they hit me. They just leave a bruise, an individual peanut bruise, even though they're in the bag.
Okay. I think the Giants found their next gimmick.
That's right. Steve Svensson asks, Melanson was moved to the 60-day DL. Not much info about actual progress regarding his injury. Yes or no question. If you were betting with your money and not the Giants, does Melanson save a game in an SF Giants uniform in 2018? No. I'm pressing the no button. There's no button. I'm pressing it anyway. No. Mark Melanson's career is over. We're never going to see him again. Or we will see him and it won't matter. And it'll be gone right away.
Steve.
Yeah, but it doesn't mean he won't get another save in the meantime.
But it will have to be in a Giants uniform. There's no way he gets it with another team. I guess this question is broad enough where it could be an independent league save. But in a Giants uniform, yeah. In 2018, it actually is very specific. No, there's no chance.
No, he does not do that.
I can kind of see him pitching an inning where he gives up a base runner and gets out of it. I can kind of see that. But I think he's done. Nothing.
Sammy?
I'm the only one who answers that question? All right.
I said no. I said no. He's not getting a save.
We've said it repeatedly on the Croncast. We had Roger Munter come in, and he took the time out of discussing the minor league season. He was so upset about the Mark Melanson DL move, because remember, Mark Melanson looked like he was going to make the roster out of spring training, and then, oh, nope, his arm, nope, it hurts again. That Roger Munter, good-souled, gentle-natured, even Steven Roger Munter goes, Mark Melanson will never pitch again. He didn't actually say it in those words. He's basically like, this is nuts that we're not talking about that the muscle was dead and they're not going to get very much out of him the rest of the deal. So, no. If people keep wondering about Mark Melanson, if you, listener, hear other people wondering about Mark Melanson, take initiative, cross the BART track, the BART train. If you hear someone on the other end of a BART train, walk all the way over to them and say, excuse me, I couldn't help but hear you mention the name Mark Melanson and wonder what was happening with him. The answer is he will never pitch again.
Watch, it's like one of his friends that's just wondering yes. what he's up to.
That's right. Yeah, that's right. Oh, did my buddy Mark Melanson. Yeah. I can tell you what he is not doing. He's not pitching again. Andrew B. Bader, one last question. How many innings will Pablo Sandoval pitch this season? That's a great question. I'm going to set the over-under at... Over-unders have to be... they can't be whole numbers. I'm going to set the over-under at 3 1/3 innings.
I have to say under, because it's kind of... It was really funny on Saturday. And then, you know, the jokes have kind of stayed fairly funny. But now it seems like they're starting to take it seriously of him as a pitching, like, option. That's not funny. I want under. It was good in the blowout. I don't want to see it again. No offense to Pablo.
I'm also going to say under. It took a blowout and a doubleheader, where in game one the starter was done in the second inning for him to pitch. The Giants as an organization do not like having position players pitch. Bruce Bochy doesn't like having position players pitch. It was fun. I don't think it's happening again. So, under.
Well, we could all be... I'm taking the under as well, and we can all be right if he pitches just two more innings. Because if he pitches three total, so we could all be winners there. And if he obviously pitches three innings in the season, some shit went down. So. All right. Well, if you want to send us your questions during the week, even when we're not asking... for people to send them, go for it. We will make a note of them. Rob Hainer had one more question. Rob, it's a little bit too existential. It's about when, if you knew you were going to die, would you want to know? Would you rather know when or how you die? That's the question. Well, we might answer that in another one. But in this right now, where the Giants are doing fine. When they're doing poorly, maybe we'll revisit that question. So, in the meantime...
Send that to us again, because we'll forget. When the Giants are on a bad losing streak...
That's right. So next Sunday.
And then we'll be like, can it be today?
That's right. The last thing you see before you die is a Derek Holland start. Excellent tipper, Derek Holland. That's what we need to do. Just spread that around. Excellent tipper, Derek Holland. And if we get John Miller to say it on the air, we should win a prize. Thanks for listening. We'll be back next week. You can find us at Mick Croncast. I'm at McCoveyCron. Doug?
At Walk McFly.
Sammy.
I'm at Sammy Higgins.
And be sure to drop in to the McCoveyChronicles.com comment section. It's just McCoveyChronicles.com. Excellent content every day. So much content every day. You won't know what to do with yourself. So you should just sit there and
read it all. We're a content machine.
That's right. Churning it out. And we'll have some big announcements this week for site editions. We're going to have some... have more writers joining us this week, so check that out as well, and we're excited to have them, and we're excited that you listen. Thanks again. Have a great week.
Bye.
Thanks. Bye.